When I directed my first film, I was 35, had a one-year-old, and no funding whatsoever. Welcome to The Break Breakdown. This is episode 17. I'm Courtney, and today we're going to talk about five principles of directing for film when you haven't gone to film school. Because I haven't gone to film school. And I think a lot of times people get caught up in their heads about having to have that degree behind them. I know that I have for a lot of different things. And in fact, I wanted to tell you a quick story before I jump into the film stuff about the fitness industry. So years ago when I was working in the fitness industry, a whole bunch of my colleagues, the other trainers at my studio, were getting their NASM certification, which is an important certification, certainly if you're going to be in the industry and you're going to be a fitness trainer professionally for a while, you want to be certified. I'm not taking anything away from that as a general idea if that's your life goal or, you know, even just your career goal for that moment in time. However, I decided that I wanted to get a $700 NASM certification when I had been teaching for about a year or two. I had majored in dance. I danced professionally, so I really knew the mechanics of the body. What I was getting through that certification was kind of new language for it, more technical language, but the principles I had already known and had been using my entire life and talking about my entire life. And also, I will say, like, the studio where I was at, I wasn't required to be certified. So for all intents and purposes, I didn't need to do it. Also, I knew that I didn't want to be teaching in fitness in like 5 years from then, at whatever point that was. I was like, I need to be out of this industry. And yet I still paid $700 for this certification because I just wanted to feel legitimate. I didn't feel I was going to be legitimate until I had that certification. And, you know, I'm not saying that institutionalized education is wrong at all. But I do think it gets tricky for us when we think that we have to do something because everyone else is doing it, when it doesn't fall in line with what we're actually looking to do moving forward, where we actually are in our career for whatever reason. I think that I definitely considered going to film school a couple years ago. I used to look that up a lot and be like, oh man, am I going to be ready to spend thousands of dollars? And that was at a point where, you know, even when I got my NASM certification, $700 was like a big deal. You know, I financed it. I couldn't just pay $700 at that point. So when I was looking into film school, it was the same kind of thing. Like, am I really ready to put down tens of thousands of dollars for this? Is that going to be worth it for me? And for a lot of people in this economy, it's not. And some people it is, and some people it's not, and you've got to figure out what the right path is for you. But for me, I had to say no to film school because of just purely technical financial reasons. And there was something in me being like, Court, you know, if you want to do this, then you need to do it. You can't just keep waiting for someone else to tell you how to do it. You've got to just do it. And that was my path, and that was my inner voice. And luckily, that inner voice was also tied to the financial challenges that were preventing me from hopping into school. So I didn't go to film school. Now, there's no shade to film school. I would love to have people on the podcast who have gone to film school and pick their brains about what that process was like and how they're kind of commingling that whole academic process with their own artistic sensibilities and what they feel they got out of it and how they feel it's helped them and how they've kind of weaved that into their own story. But again, I didn't do that. So when I told my husband, and I talked a little bit about this whole story in, I think, the very first episode of the podcast, when I told Craig that I intended to direct my first film, I didn't have any experience holding a camera, except my iPhone, any experience producing or budgeting a film or fundraising. I didn't have money. I didn't really have tons of connections, and I didn't have a script. So that was all of that is what I had when I said, I'm going to direct a film. So just to put that out there, nothing. The only thing I had was a hunch that I had to do it or I'd never know. And this like gnawing feeling and sensation of just like, I have to know. Like I have to know if I totally suck at it. I'd have to know if I'd hate it. I have to know if I'd love it. I have to know if I'd be, you know, better than I thought I might be. I don't really care if I'm good or bad, if the film is good or bad. I just need to know. I need to try. I need to know what this whole process is. So if you are like me at all, and you are in that place of like zero resources, zero experience, not really knowing why you're pulled to something, but wanting to try it, this podcast episode is for you. Because look, I'm a perpetual student. I love to learn. I love to self-teach. I also love to be in four walls of an institution with my like little Mead notebook. Is it called Mead? That like literally just came to my mind. I think it's Mead. This is when I wish someone was sitting right here and you could tell me real quick. Anyway, I want to have my little notebook and my fresh pen and take the notes and be inspired. I love being a student in a kind of traditional sense and in a non-traditional sense. But in this particular process, I didn't have any of that backbone starting off. I had nothing. So I want to talk about five principles, that I used for directing my short film that I think are helpful if you haven't sat in those four walls and taken the notes and had mentors and people kind of guiding you and coaching you along the way. If you are literally in the middle of the desert, nowhere, just like, I'm gonna make this film. All right, so number one, know the most about your story than anyone else. So when you're making a film for the first time or making anything for the first time, there's going to be a plethora of things you don't know, all right? But there's one thing that you can know, and that's your story. So for Screen Test, my short film, I started with a world that I had been saturating in, which was the fitness world. I knew the tone, I knew the characters, I knew the visual priorities, meaning like I knew exactly, well, I didn't know exactly what I wanted the costumes to look like, but I knew the feel of the costumes. And Allie, our costume designer, and I talked about that and lived in that. And then she did her amazing work, which was like bring them to life. I knew what the actors, I knew the vibe that each of the actors needed to bring. I knew what the set production needed to create that world around the actors. And the reason that's so important and kind of a fundamental for me is because as a director, you have to be able to see it for yourself as clearly as possible without any hesitation. You have to know, right? So, because communicating that vision is complicated. You're talking to a lot of different people who have a lot of different life perspectives, and you could say one word that kind of triggers their thought process in one direction that isn't exactly what you meant. So the more that you can build that world for yourself and be exacting about it, and again, that doesn't mean that you're not open, right? That's not at all what that means. It just means that you know the world that you're building. A kind of counterexample to this is a script that I'm working on right now. I've been working on it for a couple of years. It's kind of taken a few different shapes. I've done a reading of it. I've gotten feedback on it. I've kind of tinkered with it. It comes and goes for me, but I've recently, thank you, coronavirus, have had the kind of isolating time that this piece needs for me to just think on it a bit. And I recently, was able to have a breakthrough on a question about tone with the script and getting the tone right with this particular second script that I'm talking about shifted everything from the sound and pace of the dialogue to the shots to it'll change the camera angle. I mean, it'll change everything. So now that I have that tone figured out, I can go in and build out the world more in a more concrete, fully realized way. And the reason that's so important is because, you know, you're fine-tuning your communication in pre-production, on set, and absolutely in post-production when you're editing and all of that. In every stage of the process, as a director, you are directing the ship. You are saying, no, it can't have this, it's got to have that. And again, you're open to other people's interpretations. But if you know your story and you know the world and you know the values and priorities, both visually and, you know, aurally and through dialogue and all of this, then you're going to be able to make decisions quickly and efficiently, and also in a way that is cohesive. If you don't have that story down, then it's going to be a lot more difficult to move forward when things naturally arise. The counter to that is number two, which is trust the folks who know more than you. So, for instance, when I directed Screen Test, I did my own shot list. But then I shared it with the people working on the project who knew more than me to make sure that it was what we all needed it to be. So I literally Googled how to make a shot list. I literally just went on the internet and had people on YouTube tell me what they thought, to the point, I didn't spend a ton of time doing that, but to the point where I was like, okay, I get it. I get what the basic structure is. That's what I thought it was. Some things I didn't realize, like, all right, I'm going to Google camera angles because I know the feel of it. But again, I'm just trying to learn the language. So I had my producer, McKinsey, take a look at the shot list and tell me what technical elements I was missing, tell me where she thought I was off with my timing, like if I thought one page, you know, one specific page was going to take an hour. And she's like, no, that's really going to be closer to 2 hours because of these three things you didn't even think of. So it's important to be able to trust people who know more than you. You know your story, you know the theme, you know the tone, the feel, the vibe, and then you communicate it to the other people who are on your team so they can help you see that through. The other thing that was really helpful in making that shot list, and again, along the theme of my second point, which is trust the folks who know more than you, is that we went into the space onto set one or two times before shoot day with our DP, our director of photography, Alexa, and our gaffer, Sean. And going into the space beforehand, we were looking at the light and where it would fall on the floor and what time of day it was. So that meant, okay, well, then by the time on shoot day that we get to 4 p.m., it's going to be like, this is where the light is going to fall, blah, blah, blah. And what we decided to do with that shot list that I had created was film the monologues for Screen Test later in the day, because those were going to be set up in a space that was more static as far as light goes. There was more that we could do to control that space. And so the space that was a little bit more alive and we could be working with a lot more depth and there was more possibility for framing and all of that, we pushed that earlier into the day. And as a kind of actor's director, I would call myself, because I am an actor, or former actor, however you want to say it, and I really always have the actors in mind, I thought, you know, that's great that we get to do the monologues later in the second half of the day, because they have the morning to do more group stuff, to feel connected on set, to like kind of loosen each other up, to feel like, you know, dropped in a little bit more. And then when we go into the monologues that were much more focused and much more intense as far as shooting goes, with just like one person talking to camera at a time, they were already living in those characters already. And again, like the cool thing about working with people who know light better than you do and know timing better than you do is we could really be specific in those shots on how to use the shadow to create depth, what to bring into focus, how to add an element of aliveness so that not everything is flat. And if you are a better, or I would say more seasoned film director than I am, then you're like, yeah, Court, duh. Like, it's all about light. And that's cool. But I guess all I'm trying to say about that is other people brought that into the forefront of my consciousness, whereas I was really thinking about like the overall storytelling from an actor's perspective and from just the general overall storytelling perspective. So that was great, because then what you have is an opportunity. That's why the first principle is so important, because you know your tone, you know your vibe, you know your story, you know that world. And now people are saying like, what if you considered this angle so as to get this bit of shadow on the floor? You know exactly how that fits into your world and whether it does or whether it doesn't. And it's still your vision, but you are trusting the people who know more than you to teach you as you go along. Number three of the principles of directing for film when you haven't gone to film school: stay open during every single setback. Okay, setback is in quotes because the obstacle is the way. I'm sure I've quoted that before on one of these podcasts. I think it every single day of my life because I have a toddler. But I really do think of it every single day of my life. And basically, I went on to set expecting to triage everything, like to just constantly be in triage, constantly be figuring out what to do. I don't know where I got that in my head that it was going to be necessary for me to like really roll with the punches, but it wasn't a negative thing, right? It wasn't like, oh God, nothing's going to go my way. It was just like, Courtney, these are the rules of the game. The rules of the game are you've done everything you can to control what's about to happen, and now everything will fall out of your control because the world continues to move around you and is not beholden to this set for 12 hours on a Saturday. So that was everything setbacks, right? Okay, quote unquote setbacks. Everything from there was a dude right above us walking on creaky floors back and forth, and we had asked the person who we rented the space from if there would be anyone there over the weekend, and he said no. Lo and behold, upstairs the guy was there, and lo and behold, he was walking around when we were doing these monologues, and it was just one voice, and we were just trying to get it. And you know, McKinsey had to go upstairs and politely ask him if he could stop walking for a second, and he wasn't into that. That was one setback. Another, like, quote-unquote setback was the fact that we had essentially 9 hours to shoot a 12.5-page script, which, you know, was tight. And that was a setback because it was a financial decision we had to make. Would I have loved to be on set for a week? Sure. Or would I have loved to be on set for even a day and a half? Sure. But we couldn't really afford that. It was just, it's one of those things where you book another half day for the space. Okay, fine, maybe you can afford the space, but now you're asking people to give up 2 days of their weekend. You're renting all of the equipment for longer. Your insurance has to cover more days. You're just dealing with a lot of stuff. So we were trying to keep it tight, and that was a setback, so to speak, which meant that like we really needed to be tight on our timing. And my point in saying this is that it gets you really specific. If you can stay open to the setbacks, again, you can say, all right, this is worth fighting for, and or this is not worth fighting for, or this is presenting a third way that we hadn't even considered until this obstacle was presented to us. And that's what's kind of fun about it. You know, I there are many times in my life where I'm thrown off by loss of control, but for whatever reason, and by many times in my life, I mean like every other point in my life, I'm completely thrown off by loss of control. But for whatever reason, when we were filming this, I just knew that whatever was going to come was going to be part of the film. And I think that's really how you have to think of it. Whatever comes is supposed to be part of the film. It takes on a life of its own. You do everything that you can beforehand, and then you show up and you stay open. And that, I think, is the way you get through and make things that surprise even you. Number four for these principles: pick the language of the piece. So film lets the audience embody a point of view. It's kind of immersive in that way. If you think of sitting in a theater, I know it's been so long since we've done that, but you think of sitting in a theater and having that screen kind of take you wherever the film is going, and you are right there and you are smelling the smells and you are hearing the sounds and you are, you know, seeing someone touch another person's shoulder and you feel it. Like, you're just brought into these moments. And you have to know as a director what the language of the piece is in order to bring the audience into it. What language are you using in order to tell your story? So let me break this down, because I think that's a little bit esoteric, but here's how it works out in real life. For screen test, there was a constant triangulation of three points of view. So there were the characters who were the fitness instructors. So we'll say there were the fitness instructors. There was the casting director that was always off screen. You didn't see her ever until the very end, and then you never even saw her face. And then the third point of view was the camera, which is kind of the audience, but I would say in a less traditional sense, because, well, I won't go into the details of the film exactly. Hopefully you've watched it, or you will watch it, linked in the show notes. But the camera is kind of the audience, and then kind of this like third all-knowing entity that picks and chooses who's going to be on the reality show. So it's this constant triangulation, screen test is, of these three points of view, and which moment needed more of which point of view was the complete like process of the film. So I'm constantly asking myself in writing the script and then in creating the shot list, what is seen and unseen in this? What is said and unsaid? You know, it's very much like poetry in that you want to just say enough, like just enough to make the audience or the reader say the rest. You want to bring them to that point so that the audience is thinking like, well, it must be this, but you never really answer it. So they're never really sure. So they're just living in that question or living in that assumption. I mean, that's what I think is really fun. And you also want to give enough details without fixating on exposition. So also, just to be clear, when I say the language of the piece, I'm saying that in a metaphorical way. Like, I'm not saying the actual dialogue or actual language. I'm saying, in what way are you telling the story? How are you telling the story? For me on screen test, it was actually quite wordy. I mean, if you look at the script, there's probably a lot more words on the page than most 12 and a half page short films. And that's because obviously like the medium of filmmaking is visual. It's about what you see. It is about what you hear. It is about that combination of what you hear and what you see. But it's very much obviously a visual medium. And what I wrote in screen test was very wordy. And I tried to make sure it wasn't strict exposition, but actually giving life to the ideas that I was trying to express. And the reason I wanted to make it so wordy, or why I allowed it to kind of develop into that, I don't know if I like made a conscious choice of this is going to be wordy or not, but was A, structurally, the kind of piece that I needed to make needed to be incredibly straightforward. So the entire concept lent itself to characters using a lot of words. And B, something fascinating to me is the overshare on social media. Like, you know what I mean? And something about the content of this piece and what the characters were saying just felt like overshare after overshare in front of a potentially sterile, cold, nondescript, algorithmically inclined audience. And oversharing in this highly glossed up world kind of polishes over the grotesque nature of you know, selling our inner lives to get ahead, right? So the wordiness of it was actually part of the language of the film. I'm gonna say all this stuff. I'm saying it and it's, you know, word vomit, and I'm just letting it all out and I'm telling you everything, but everything that I'm telling you is not the total truth, and you kind of know that, and I kind of know that, and we're kind of doing this dance, and then meanwhile there are certain moments that are true that I don't know you're picking up on. And so then as the audience, you're just kind of getting all that information all at once and trying to decipher what it means. And that for me was the language of the piece, these three points of view kind of triangulating in a conversation and fighting for dominance. Okay, the last one, number five. Everything you see is Chekhov's gun. All right, so let me explain that if you don't know that. So I'm a theater kid and I went to school for theater and dance. So in Anton Chekhov's plays, he would have, if there was a gun that you see at the beginning of the play, he would use it by the end. Someone would shoot it. The gun would go off. Something's going to happen with the gun. And it was used as a sense of foreshadowing. And what I mean by saying, like, as a director, when you're doing your first film or you're doing a film without really having a lot of guidelines, I think this is a helpful guideline to have, which is that everything is important. So everything you see in the shot, everything you see, it's not just the shape of the shot, it's the content of the shot and how it interacts with the shape of the shot. It's how the camera moves. Is it completely still? Is it shaky? Like in screen test, it was mockumentary style. So it was free. I forget what they even call it now. I'd have to look at my shot list because, again, I Googled it. But everything's important, right? So the plants we used on set were fake. The yellow backdrop has a meaning. There's one shot of two women, of Caroline and Olivia, doing their makeup in the mirror. And the mirror is dirty. And we purposefully left it dirty. And that has meaning. So anything that you're putting in your shot has to mean something to the story. It can be mundane or thematic or foreshadowing or just like entrench you in the idea to make it impossible for the audience to escape. But this is truly part of the poetry of putting together this medium and this way of storytelling. You are basically identifying your language, using all the resources possible. Sometimes it's your brain, sometimes it's other people's brains, and then making meaning out of literally every single thing you choose to make. There's so much more. I mean, like, I could go on and on and on, as you know. And there's so much more that I learned from this short film that we did. There's so much more I haven't learned yet that I'm so excited to learn. But if you're considering directing for the first time, I just think you can get to a pretty good point with even only these five principles. Just to review, know the most about your story than anyone else. Trust the folks who know more than you. Stay open during every single setback. Pick the language of your piece. And everything you see is Chekhov's gun. Those five things, they're probably pretty simple. Maybe to people who are more advanced than me, whatever that means, that's like I'm speaking the ABCs, fine. I think you can put together the alphabet piece by piece. Some people go to school for it, some people just go out into the world and try and do it, some people do a combination of both. There's no right or wrong way to do it, but if you're someone like me who didn't choose to go to film school or couldn't go to film school or didn't have access to it for whatever reason, I really think these five principles can get you to a fantastic place And by fantastic, again, I'm not judging that by external standards. I mean something that you can be proud of, that you can learn from, and that you can feel like you fulfilled as best you could this time around. And next time it'll be better, and next time it'll be better and better, better. And the last thing I wanted to say is just, in the end, filmmaking is another medium of storytelling. And you probably already know how to tell a decent story. Like, you've probably captured your friend's attention at dinner. You know, you probably have that one story that you tell that always gets a laugh. And you can all, you know, like, you're a storyteller by nature. And there are plenty of technical things that you can look up on the internet or learn from someone else who's further down the road from you. But the thing you have to teach yourself is you have to decipher for yourself what kind of story is worth telling. And that can only come from you. You're the only one who can decide that. And the only way you're going to find out what story is worth telling is by trying and trying and trying again to get it right. And when you do, let me know. I'm still trying. And that's kind of part of the fun. So, you know, cheers to trying to get it right one shot at a time. Thanks for listening. You know, I'm going to ask you if you can rate and review this episode on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps our little guy get discovered. Obviously, share it with friends and family. Tag at Queensbird Films or at Courtney Romano on Instagram. Or even leave me a message in the show notes. You can click on the link in the show notes and it'll take you to a place where you can leave me a voice message, which is really fun. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear any feedback you had on this episode or principles that you've used in directing film that you think would be really helpful to others. I would love to share that with others. So leave it in an audio message for me and maybe it'll end up on an episode down the line. And as always, thank you so, so much for being here and tuning in. It means so much to me, and I really appreciate it. I'll see you next week.